This episode is brought to you by Magic Spoon. Mark, if there's one thing that you know about me, it's that I own three t-shirts. If there's two things that you know about me, it's that I am a cereal fanatic. If you were to look in my background right now, you would see cereal everywhere. And Magic Spoon has taken cereals that we loved as children and made them healthier for us as adults without sacrificing any of the flavor.
Hal, I have to say, people of the world, can you hear this? That is the sound of a spoon tapping on a bowl, because I did not even know that we were doing a Magic Spoon ad when I sat down at my computer right now. I literally just had a bowl of blueberry Magic Spoon cereal. I sat down and I'm just, Hal and I are just chatting and I'm eating it. And then I'm like, okay, we're doing Magic Spoon today. It's just become a part of my life now. Is if you're a person that just grabs a bowl of cereal whenever, this is one that you don't feel guilty about, because it is zero sugar, 11 grams of protein, and only 3 net carbs in each serving. So you don't have to feel guilty about it. You got 4 flavors: cocoa, fruity, frosted, and blueberry. Blueberry being my favorite.
That's your favorite?
It's my favorite. I thought it was going to be the fruity one because I loved the fruity one. And then I tried the blueberry one. It was the 4th one I tried. And I was like, oh, this is MVP.
Yeah.
What's your favorite?
I thought it was going to be the fruity one too, but I think the frosted is my favorite. I like just a simple frosted. It's so great. You know, if you're trying to eat healthier, it's keto friendly. It's gluten free. It's grain free, soy free, low carb, and GMO free. Here's what I want you to do. We both want you to do this, but I'll say it. We want you to go to magicspoon.com/we got this to grab a variety pack and try it today. And be sure to use our promo code We Got This at checkout to get free shipping.
Yes, that's right. And Magic Spoon is so confident in their product, it is backed with a 100% happiness guarantee. So if you don't like it for any reason, now this is only applies to the cereal. It's not like your general happiness 100% guarantee. But if it's related to the cereal and you're not happy for any reason, then they'll refund your money, no questions asked. That is magicspoon.com/we got this, and use the code We Got This and you get free shipping.
Thank you, Magic Spoon, for sponsoring this podcast. And now enjoy this episode of We Got This with Mark and Hal.
Hello, I'm Hal Lublin.
And I'm Mark Gagliardi.
Since the dawn of humanity, one issue has gone unsettled. With the fate of the world in the balance, we're here to settle once and for all. Best Christmas Ghost.
That's right. Don't worry, everyone. We got this.
Podcasts should have a theme song.
Podcasts should not have a theme song.
Yes, they should.
No, they shouldn't.
They sound good.
Yeah, but people are just going to skip past it.
You know what?
You're right. We got this.
Hey, Hal.
Hello. You want to tell me the thing you were going to tell me? You said, I'll tell you something. Tell me.
Here's the thing that I did. For those who don't know, I am out of the country and in quarantine right now.
That's right. For cuteness.
For cuteness. I am in quarantine. I've not left the apartment that I am in for days.
Mm-hmm.
And yet somehow I have lost my wallet. Hal just did a spit take.
You had it when you, where is the last place you saw it? Was it in the apartment?
That table. It was that table behind me in the apartment.
Who has access? We need motive. We need opportunity.
No one has access but me. It is somewhere. I have scoured this place top to bottom. I have, wearing black, by the way, when you're looking for something and crawling all over the floor is a terrible idea, because when you stand up, you look like a dog blanket. I have no idea where my wallet went, and I have not left.
Wow. That's, that is the most marked thing that could happen.
It really is. I'm looking around the apartment for it, and I had to stop and take a moment. And I think I did audibly go, really, Gags? Like, my brain just.
Even you got to the point.
Even I knew that I was being entirely too on brand. It's between the couches.
The scenario you're setting up sounds like one of those like riddles, like a body lays on the floor. There's water everywhere. A curtain billows to the side.
Right. What happened?
An apartment abroad. A missing wallet.
Oh my God.
A frustrated and confused actor who looks like
I have
a dog.
No idea what's happening.
What yeah. happened?
Oh, the answer, correct answer is this guy.
Do you think in keeping with the theme of this episode, that at night while you're sleeping, you'll be visited by the ghost of your wallet?
Or the ghost of wallets past, like my great big Velcro one that had a picture of Michael Jackson on it.
That you taped on there or came with it, like printed?
No, it was like a printed Michael Jackson 80s Beat It. It was actually the picture. It was a two-tone version of the picture on the cover of the Bad album.
Oh, where he's like in repose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he's like chilling.
That's Thriller. This is the one where he's standing in
oh,
the
bad.
Black
oh,
leather
yeah,
with, made of
yes,
zippers.
With all the zippers. Yeah. For some reason you said Bad, and in my head I was like, Thriller, right?
Maybe it was the leaned back Thriller. All I know it was that era, like, youngish Michael Jackson.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
There's a big leap between Thriller and Bad, though. He had already started to, like, metamorphosize and really, like, he changed his look from the 70s into the 80s as he had the nose job, and then he changed his hair, and then by night, like, I remember when Bad came out, I was like, wow, he looks way different.
Yeah, I guess that's true. Now that I'm thinking about it, it was Thriller Michael Jackson because his hair was short.
Mm.
And he didn't have that one permanently matted down spot on his forehead.
Yes, the special.
I don't know why that always drove me crazy. That just one spot that was like, dude, just fluff that up when you do the rest of your hair.
Yeah. It's a whole look.
What is your most ridiculous wallet? Did you ever have a fun, like, when you were a kid, wallet or the one made out of duct tape that a bunch of people made?
I had, like, the coin purse that was rubber.
The little squeezy rubber.
Yeah.
But was it full of coins or tokens?
Oh, that's a good question. I feel like tokens would have been in my pocket because I could spend them quicker.
Yeah, that's fair.
I don't even know if I think I maybe carried it around. Maybe it's like an ET or something, and I would carry it around for a little bit, but then it was heavy because it had coins in it. So I would just say, forget it. Like, what do I need commerce for? I'm six. I have no concept of spend. One time,
sure,
when I was a kid, the ice cream truck was coming, and I was so excited. I had to be like, exactly.
Yeah.
You heard that coming. You got excited. So my parents gave me a dollar to go outside. And I went outside and I waited and I heard and it sounded like it was getting closer. And then it went further away. It never came to our block. So what did I do as a very young child? I want to say I was like 5 years old. I was like, well, the truck didn't come. I guess we don't need this dollar. And I tore it into small pieces and threw it in the gutter.
You are terrible at money.
And came back in. And I was like, the ice cream truck didn't come. And my parents are like, where's that dollar that we gave you? I'm like, don't worry. I took care of it. You won't have to see that dollar again. I know you were anxious to get rid of it. When we had no money at the time. It was a big deal to get, like, they were expecting change from that. And so I had to they devised a.
Yeah, I broke it up into quarters. Here's a quarter of it. Here's a quarter of it. I'll divide it up into tenths.
Yeah, I was going to say I broke it up into like dimes or nickels. So they they devised a series of chores, the sum total of which would equal $1 of labor. And I think they came out ahead on it, even though
I'm sure
like
they
a
did.
Kid. It wasn't like wax on, wax off. It was like clean your room, make your bed.
I know that you viewed doing housework as a particular torture because you referred to it as them devising a series of chores. And the only time that phrase ever gets used is when something nefarious that you do not want is happening. Well, they devised a series of chores that I must accomplish to reach the castle in the middle where David Bowie is wearing a codpiece. Sorry, I just saw Labyrinth at the drive-in recently.
Is that where your wallet is? Are you sure you didn't leave it at the drive-in?
Man, here's what's weird. I have the cards from it. So I'm not really in dire straits because I had taken a couple of the cards out when I was trying to buy stuff online and cards weren't working because whatever reason overseas or I hadn't called the bank or whatever. So I have
the cards and I have my passport, but I just don't have a wallet. I'm not freaking out about it though because of those things. Like I have an ID. I have the most official ID you can have and I have a way to get to my money.
I think I know what happened.
I don't think you do. I think this is going to be a mean joke.
No, I think it's the...
What
I
happened?
I think I figured it out. I think your wallet left you and wanted you have... It's like, you know, you're asleep and the wallet like snuck out of bed and took all of its cards out and like, I'm going to leave these for Mark, but it's time for me to go my own way. And then it slid underneath the door and slinked off like a muppet worm.
It reached inside itself, grabbed a $5 bill, crumpled it up, and threw it on the bed.
Yeah. Here, this is for a taxi. It was gone.
I can't take a taxi. I'm in quarantine.
Roxanne.
Oh, my God.
That's the name of your wallet, right? Your wallet's name is Roxanne.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, it had a two-tone picture of Sting on it.
Young Sting.
But we're not here to talk about wallets or Michael Jackson or, you know, any of my stupidities.
Could have
fooled
me. We
are here today to talk. Fair enough. We generally are here to talk about my stupidities. We are here today to talk about Christmas. Once again, it's the holiday season. Happy holidays, Hal.
Happy holidays to you.
Sorry that most of these are about Christmas, but, you know.
It's well established that I love
Christmas. It's well established that you love Christmas.
I'm down.
This was suggested by, let me check, Mark Gagliardi.
Oh, good. I was going to say, did you lose the suggestion as well? I just had it here. That's why we've been filling time talking about your wallet. You had the suggestion. God.
I actually don't know. Somebody may have suggested this, but it popped into my head. It's mine now. I'm taking it. Anybody, whoever, if you did suggest it, then you know what? We are simpatico, you and I. We're going to talk about Christmas ghosts, specifically the three ghosts from Charles Dickens' immortal classic, A Christmas Carol. Four ghosts. Sorry. Hal held up four fingers over our Zoom call. Four ghosts that encompass Ebenezer Scrooge's one very strange night. Here's what I don't understand about the timing of the ghosts in A Christmas Carol. I think later versions and movies have fixed it, but the way that Jacob Marley describes when the ghosts are going to show up in the original, but like the movies nowadays, they fixed it. They just say, expect the first when the bell tolls one, the second when the bell tolls two, and the third when the bell tolls three, right? And that's how they do it. In the original book, the timing of the ghosts is an absolute mess that has always bothered me from the time I was a little kid.
Okay.
Here's a quote of the way in the original text what Jacob Marley says. Expect the first tomorrow when the bell tolls one. So it's Christmas Eve. This I understand. You know, people who are being pedantic will say, technically 1 a.m. is tomorrow. And you're like, all right, fine. So expect the first tomorrow when the bell tolls one, right? Then he says, expect the second on the next night at the same hour. The third upon the next night when the last stroke of 12 has ceased to vibrate. So bear with me. What Jacob Marley says is going to happen is there's going to be a ghost at 1 a.m. on Christmas. There's going to be a ghost at 1 a.m. on December 26th. And there's going to be a ghost at midnight on the 27th. And yet when he wakes up, it is Christmas morning. So this has always been a confusing thing to me.
It's weird, but I think it's – I'm glad you brought up Jacob Marley first. I feel like we should maybe talk about these ghosts in the order in which they appear.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea.
And I think you've illustrated really well why Jacob Marley probably won't win. Here's why. Here's my theory.
Okay.
Nobody – first of all, he doesn't have the right schedule because none of the ghosts have bothered to tell him. And the reason why – is all the other ghosts are super busy. Like Scrooge is not the only person that they're visiting. There's a reason why they're like, all right, here's your pass. Now I got to get out of here. I got to go see Joe Schmendrick over on the other side of the Tower of London. But Marley only has to visit one guy. Like how big was his social circle? Even if he was a successful businessman, he obviously pushed all those people away. So it's not like he's like, you know, I feel like what's not in the book or any of the films is after he's done delivering the message and he's like, so, do you want to hang out a little while? How have you been? I mean, I know I've been watching you know, you're forging the chains of the afterlife.
Look, Marley, you said someone was coming at 1 a.m. I should probably get some sleep before that.
Absolutely, you should get sleep, but also... Right.
Jacob, yes. What's another one of your hypotheticals from when we were working together?
Let's find out. What if a new business where you're partnered with a ghost and it's a haunted money lending?
This sounds a bit more like a tale from a dime novel than from an actual business portfolio.
What is new with dime novels, by the way? Read them all to me. I haven't caught
up in
years.
I've got to get to bed, Jacob. Yes. I'm terribly sorry.
Of course. I'm so sorry, Scrooge. You should be going to bed because the ghosts are coming. But I'm here now. I'm just wondering, what are you thinking?
What am I thinking? I'm thinking in this moment, my God, I've got to get to bed. How do I get this man out of my home?
Ooh, very interesting. Say more.
Jacob, for God's sake, I've got 3 ghosts to visit me. I've got 3 ghosts.
Plus 1. I am a ghost, you know.
I'm
very busy. I could be anywhere tonight.
Here we go again.
And yet I've come to visit you, and you completely ignore me.
Laying the guilt on.
Like I don't matter at all. Oh, poor Jacob Marley, he's just dead. He looks like he had tooth surgery and he's covered in chains, but we won't ask about him.
Yeah, well, why would we ask about you? It's been 7 years this very night.
That's right. I died on Christmas Eve. The saddest way to die of all.
And how is that toothache?
Not at all. Oh, it's terrible. It has not healed at all. And I don't even get to change the bandage because it's chained onto my head. Thanks for asking.
Can I talk to Hal again?
Yeah, I'm here.
Do you think?
Is Hal there? Are we inside the actor's studio?
Yeah.
May
I speak with Hal now? No, I just know that you and I could play that game forever.
True.
Do you think it's a toothache? Is that what the assumption you're working with is?
Unless his jaw's about to fall off.
That's what I thought it was. I thought that in Victorian times, they would do that to keep your mouth closed.
Would they?
That they would sort of bandage a dead body's mouth shut so it wouldn't drop open. There was one of the Christmas Carol movies where he pulls the thing off and his mouth – there's actually multiple movies where that happens and his mouth drops open. One of them is done digitally. I think it's probably the Jim Carrey version.
Right.
Where it's done – it digitally drops. But there's one where it's whichever old English actor is playing Jacob Marley. He's like, I shall do it myself using nothing but the physical instrument I was given. So he takes the bandage off in the movie and then just drops his mouth open cartoonishly. And it always kind of took me out of it. That moment, I'm like, this is just an old British actor being like, I shall embody this role of Jacob Marley. Bring me real chains. What are these, foam?
Yes, Mr. Weatherby, we have to use foam chains. We can't use actual chains because of insurance reasons.
It's Lord Weatherby.
Lord Weatherby, I'm sorry. Well, this is Cleveland.
Yes, I did not buy 1 square foot of Scottish land online to be called Mr. Weatherly.
Can you take off the tartan, please? We're ready to roll.
Nay.
Do you think as soon as he did the jaw drop, they had to edit it real quickly because he went, cut and print.
That was wonderful.
Got it in one, everybody.
I'll be in whatever Indiana assumes is a trailer.
Cleveland is in Ohio, sir. Lord.
Wherever I am.
Jacob Marley was always my favorite character as a kid. Because Jacob Marley, he was so theatrical. You know what a part of it was, I did the play A Christmas Carol when I was a kid in Tennessee. And it was the big production in the city that, like, every year they did it. And every year they had kids from the town would, you know, play all the kids in the show. And it was put on by it was either the university did it or the Knoxville Opera Company did it. It was like a big, big deal. And so it had a huge budget. And it was one of those shows that was the first time I had seen, I saw it one year and then I did it the next year. It's one of those shows that introduced me to the magic of theater because it would actually snow on stage, which blew my mind. The stage revolved, which was the first time I'd ever seen that. It was, I mean, all of these things for this, like a little kid that had not seen a lot of theater to go, oh, I mean, I was probably 6 or 7 at the time, maybe. And it just, it was just wonderful. And Jacob Marley was, they had like dry ice or a fog machine or something blowing. So he had smoke all around him. He was in this special greenish light and he was just in this beautiful macabre costume that was sort of covered in dust and these chains. And it was the most theatrical thing in the show. So I became obsessed with Jacob Marley to the point where I still have somewhere, I think at my mom's house, a Jacob Marley doll. I know it's weird for a kid to have a Jacob Marley doll, but I would bring it out every Christmas. It was like my own, I had my very own Christmas decoration and it was this Jacob Marley doll. And so when I did the play, I was like obsessed with it. And it was this old thespian played Marley. It's always the way, like they just get like, whoever played Lear last season. It's almost like Marley has, because he comes in for one scene and crushes it, you get an actor with more gravitas to play Marley than you do even for Scrooge. You know what I mean?
Sure. Yes, yes. You have to,
like,
it's a lot to carry as an actor. You have to inspire fright and also have compassion.
You have to make that believable jaw drop thing.
You have to do the jaw drop. Did you see Derek Jacobi's Marley at the Globe?
No.
This feels like the kind of thing, like, I'm doing Marley at the Globe this season.
Oh, are Very you doing excited. The mouth thing?
Of course. I've been training with a mouthologist for months.
Yeah, so I love Jacob Marley. But look, the guy does not understand how time works.
Yeah, he doesn't understand that. Like, you get the sense that maybe he wasn't that good of a business. Like, Scrooge is, he obviously has wealth, but that office is terrible. Mm-hmm. How were two of them ever there?
Yeah, this is just jerks, just real jerks. You expect one Michael Scott to work in the office, not two. But even Michael Scott means well.
Yeah, they made competing threat level midnights.
Yeah,
1 year. But also he doesn't, I mean, he sets up the premise of morality and why he's being visited.
Right.
And in a sense, he's, you would assume, for the sake of argument in this, we're going to work under the presumption that the ghosts are real and that this is not all just Scrooge's conscience coming to haunt him.
Okay.
So in that sense, Marley has chosen, you could then theorize Marley has chosen Scrooge for this. To say, I'm suffering this terrible fate. There's still time for Scrooge. I'm going to right this wrong for someone else.
Do you think he put it into motion?
I think so. He would have to, right? Unless there's somebody who's in like the office of Christmas Redemption. It's like, what about Scrooge this year? As long as we're going to blue sky this thing.
I mean, look, I don't know. And not to get into the theology of it, but I know that that Charles Dickens was a pretty religious guy. He wrote The Life of Our Lord. I mean, he wrote his own version of the Bible for kids.
That's true.
Could very well, you know what I mean? Like, it could be that Jacob Marley is working for whatever higher power there is. He has been ordered to do this. It doesn't really go into that. It's actually a really cool story. I wonder if – I like the idea better that Jacob Marley is doing it of his own volition because he cares about Scrooge. As terrible as Scrooge is, they only had one another.
Yeah.
And Marley even says – he's like, look, for these 7 years, I've been wandering the world covered with these heavy chains and cash boxes. And every time I made someone suffer, we put another link in the chain. And, you know, you get the sense that he does feel actual remorse.
Yeah. And also, if he's ordered to do it, don't you think he'd be really bitter? Like, oh, this was an option? I went down the same. What makes him so special? I died 7 years ago on Christmas Eve, by the way. Thank you very much. And no ghosts visited me at all. He just decided, well, let's end this one. And now
maybe he didn't have any friends.
Well, he had Scrooge. they had only each other.
Scrooge like, wasn't so dead yet to come visit him as a ghost. If Scrooge had gone first, he would have visited Marley.
But exactly. It's like he's like, oh, because I didn't make more friends. Is that how it works? It's all about who you know over here, isn't it? It's not at all about a merit-based system. Clearly, I'm going to go do this, so I'm a great guy. I don't get spared. I got all these boxes and chains I got to wear for how long? Oh, right, forever. Plus, nobody's fixing my jaw. Yeah, but I'll go do it. No big deal. It's fine. Happy to. What a team player I am.
Great. You are. Go do it.
Put that on my annual review. Why don't you?
By the way, did I tell you that's my new rebuttal to passive aggression? Is just assume that it is friendliness. Fine. I'll go do it. Okay. Thanks.
Appreciate it.
Yeah. Like, just give it the, give all aggression no benefit of the doubt and eliminate all of it.
Wait, did he not get I was trying to martyr myself? Like, they're just nope. muttering to themselves as they go off.
I just assumed docility. The remedy to passive aggression is assuming docility in the aggressor.
Uncle Mark's Christmas tips.
That's right. It's going to look. It's going to
hey,
work.
Hey, kids.
It's going to work wonders around the Christmas dinner table. Oh, I'm sorry. My opinions are wrong. Maybe I should just shut up then.
Good idea. Anyway, could you pass me the no! pears? Hey, what if the were all due to a bit of bad beef? What if that's what it was?
Well, if one was a bit of bad beef, one was a blot of mustard, one was a crumb of cheese. I think Future was definitely a fragment of an underdone potato, because if you've ever had a fragment of an underdone potato, you will see the Grim Reaper.
That's just scientific fact.
Yeah, they are unpleasant.
I watched the National Geographic special about it. It was haunting. All right, let's thermometer on your potatoes, people, unless you want to get visited by death himself. Not to get you, but just to show up and point.
Also, if you did not have the bit of undigested beef, the blot of mustard, or the crumb of cheese, and you only had the underdone potato, imagine how weird it would be. Like, you wouldn't even know that he was the ghost of Christmas yet to come, because no one would have told you what was happening. You would just be like, well, I guess I'm dying tonight. There's the Grim Reaper. And he's like, no, I get that. That happens a lot. I'm the ghost of Christmas yet to come. I'm not the Grim Reaper.
By the way, I get the flowery language of the foods, but couldn't he just say, I wonder if it was that roast beef sandwich or potato salad I had for lunch? It did not sit well the entire afternoon.
Yeah, all of those ingredients really could be one meal.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. For sure it was.
Yeah. Like,
well, I'd eat for breakfast, mustard and cheese for lunch, yeah. And a sensible potato dinner.
I want Scrooge to write a cookbook. Yeah, everything. It's not. Yeah, it's not tablespoons and cups. It's blobs and crumbs and fragments.
One crumb of strawberry, plus one blot of ham.
Oh,
add one undercooked piece of watercress.
One blot of ham. Oh God, that sounds like a early REM album. Like when they were just in Georgia playing bars.
Yeah. Just a sitting in a ham.
Sitting in a Waffle House trying to figure out what to name their album and looking at the menu. Blot of ham. Did Scrooge write this?
That was actually the stuff that was stuck to the menu that inspired. Isn't that the worst when you go to a restaurant and it's clear? Like, I understand how food gets onto the cover of a menu. I don't understand how it gets inside. Because once you've ordered and eaten your food, why you go back and you like, was it some lonely person who ordered a meal by the, like a very sloppy meal and then was like, I'm bored. I'm going to read this menu while I eat. I didn't really understand everything in the salad section. I want to really peruse that and get my brain around it.
Do you think it happened a lot more back in the day before cell phones? Because I'm imagining that I probably had this happen to me at one point or another. And if I were a parent in those days, it probably would have been the case like, oh, this kid's driving me crazy. Here, read the menu.
Yeah.
But it's not even the kids menu that has the maize on it. I don't care. Just read this menu. All right. Ooh, a Caesar.
Ooh, look at all these healthy heart chicken dishes. How exciting.
Wait, this Chinese restaurant has sushi? How very Tennessee of this place.
Oh, God.
All right, let's talk about the bit of undigested beef that is the Ghost of Christmas Past. So the Ghost of Christmas Past, have we thoroughly mocked Jacob Marley?
Yeah, I think so. I think we covered everything that needs to be said there.
Okay, good. Let's move on to the Ghost of Christmas Past,
yep.
Who is always depicted. Again, I've got the text of the book in front of me, but, you know, it's become such a part of pop culture now that I feel like this is just the jumping off point for the character. It's been expanded and changed around and, you know, visually been given many different representations, but I can.
Always a big jolly white man, but tons of different representations.
No. This is Christmas Past.
Isn't he always the big,
No, man. Christmas
like,
Past.
Hey, everybody.
No, that's the Ghost of Christmas Present who looks like Brown Beard Santa Claus.
Yeah. Okay. I'm mixing them up.
Yeah. No, it
Kane was the Ghost of Christmas Present and Scrooged.
Right. Scrooged made it all different. They changed everything around. Yeah. This is how the Ghost of Christmas Past is described in the book. It was a strange figure, like a child, yet not so like a child as like an old man viewed through some supernatural medium, which gave him the appearance of having receded from the view and being diminished to a child's proportions. Its hair, which hung about its neck and down its back, was white as if with age, and yet the face had not a wrinkle in it, and the tenderest bloom was on the skin. The arms were very long and muscular, the hands the same, as if its hold were of uncommon strength. Its legs and feet, most delicately formed, were, like those upper members, bare. It wore a tunic of the purest white, and round its waist was bound a lustrous belt, the sheen of which was beautiful. It held a branch of fresh green holly in its hand, and, in singular contradiction of that wintry emblem, had its dress trimmed with summer flowers. But the strangest thing about it was that from the crown of its head there sprung a bright, clear jet of light by which all this was visible, and which was doubtless the occasion of its using, in its duller moments, a great extinguisher for a cap, which now it held under its arm. And may I say, Hal, that is a terrifying description of a ghost. If you wake up and you see this old man baby dressed all in a little white tunic covered in flowers holding a dunce cap.
Super ripped.
With super ripped arms but teeny frail legs. Like, let's be honest, a lot of gym rats.
Sure. Don't skip leg day, everybody.
Yeah, don't skip leg day, guys. Yeah, this character I've seen many different versions of. Like, sometimes it's sort of a waifish girl. Sometimes it's a sort of feminine boy. Mm-hmm. But always
pixie-ish.
Small and frail and pixie-ish, yeah.
Or like a fairy.
And,
like a fairy.
And very
sometimes
gentle.
Of any gender, sort of like a fairy of the forest.
Yeah. F-A-E. It's a very non-gendered character.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Now I got it. Now I'm locked in.
Now you know the character.
One. Yeah.
Now you're scrolling through all the different versions in your head of what you've seen of this character.
Now here's the big question.
Okay.
The $64,000 question.
Mm-hmm.
Does the Ghost of Christmas Past go back to the past and bet on NBA games? Because they already know the outcome and they've been building a fortune for the day that they retire.
These are but visions.
You don't think a vision's going to lay down $100 on the Lakers in 2002?
No, I'm saying that what Scrooge and the ghost go back to see in Christmas Past are visions. They cannot affect the past in any way.
Well, he can't. I'll bet you that ghost knows tells everybody that. Like, it's impossible. We can't affect anything. And then, like, time cop
going back. Give me 20 on the Lakers.
Stocks. Yeah. Yeah. Basically, the Ghost of Christmas Past is pulling off the time cop villain's plan.
Look, I don't hate that idea. Though I do think that if that were the case, I think it would have been a heck of a lot easier. That would have been a shorter movie.
That's true.
I would like to go back in time and
and put money on
karate chop to the neck. Done. Or, you know, split, jump up in the air, split, kick.
The Ghost of Christmas Past is all, you could always tell, no matter what form they take in popular media, they always have the candle extinguisher under one arm and the sports almanac from Back to the Future 2 under the other. And that's how you know, you're like, oh, Ghost of Christmas Past. If it was just one of them, I wouldn't know.
Oh my God.
I thought it was Old Biff or just a candle extinguisher, but now I see, oh, it has both.
When it's got both. Let's talk about what the Ghost of Christmas Past does.
Mm-hmm.
Because this I think brings us to the big question of this. Mm-hmm. And what initially sparked my interest in this topic. Not that these ghosts aren't wonderful characters in their own right. This one's a little creepy. I'm going to say this is, as a character, probably the weakest for me.
Okay.
Just because it always, I guess as a kid, because I loved the story so much, the Ghost of Christmas Past always seemed so small in comparison to what I knew was coming next. It was like, yeah, get to the big, loud, funny one. Get to the fun Christmas that has food everywhere and is throwing a big party. Why do I have to see this little wafy one? But I think this section of the story is so great. The question that it brings me to is, would you rather visit your Christmases past, present, or future?
Well, I've lost a parent, so I'd rather go to the past. But I also think from a story perspective, they each serve a different purpose, right? And outside of just showing the places to which they travel achieve a certain end. Mm-hmm. The Ghost of Christmas Past is about showing Scrooge who he really is by going back and showing who he was and how a hard shell has been built around that person and how he's pushed his true self away and his ability to be charitable and kind. Then the Ghost of Christmas Present serves to open his eyes to the world around him because he's so singularly focused that he's unaware. So then now he remembers who he was. He's found the kindness in him. He's accessed emotions and the trauma that caused him to become callous. He's seen the suffering of people around him, which he's never really thought about because he just assumes the worst in every single person and is focused only on the acquisition of wealth, which is the one thing he can count on is money. And then the Ghost of Christmas Future shows him the path that you're on. This is where it leads. And they each serve a purpose of the equation that add up to him being a changed person.
Yeah. I would agree with that. I think, though, for me, with the way you put it, I think for me, the one that stands out the most as, you know, just as a within the story itself, the most valuable, I guess not most valuable, the one that seems the most Christmassy, I guess, to me, is in the spirit of Christmas, is the second one, is the Ghost of Christmas Present. Because that to me is, if the first one is, here is a lot of self-reflection. The Ghost of Christmas Present is present. It's here. It's now. It's in this moment. This is what Christmas is right now. And not only that, we're taking you out of the equation. This is how Christmas is celebrated by everyone. And like you said, that expands it to the world around you. And if that's not the Christmas spirit, I don't know what is. The idea of, you know, looking outward and spreading love and joy to the people around you.
Yeah. The Ghost of Christmas Past is like a therapist. They're like, let's go look at things that happened when you were a child to learn more about you. Then the Ghost of Christmas Present is the person who runs a charity. And is like, you should see, here's all the suffering that's going on that you may not even be aware of. And the Ghost of Christmas Future is your teenage child who's just gotten into Bauhaus. And it's like, we're all going to die. You're going to die. It doesn't matter. This is where you're going, man.
Hey, is that Gray's Sports Almanac 2050 under your arm? Can I borrow that?
Blink.
Yeah, but think of it this way. Would you rather spend Christmas with – what was the second one you said?
The person who runs the charity.
Yeah. Do you think Christmas would be better spent with a charity, with your therapist, or Bauhaus kid?
Well, look, I enjoy giving to charity. I donate to both charities and political causes. Like, I donate when I can, where I can.
I was wondering where that was going to go because you said, I've donated to both charities. And I went, does he know there are more than two charities?
Oh, there. I know there's a third one, but I haven't looked into them yet.
That's fair.
I do. I also don't like, you know, sometimes like a charity, like you may have even given to a charity and then they're collecting somewhere else and you all of a sudden feel guilty about any money that you spend that is not on an absolute necessity, even like getting and giving gifts. I don't like that part of it.
Yeah. Oh, did I tell you what we've done the last few years? And I love it.
What?
It was my mom's idea. She was like, I don't want gifts. She's like, give money to a charity that you think would reflect like my values. I'm like, that's a great idea. So now every year we get my mom an animal for a family somewhere. We do a Heifer International. We get her an animal for a family somewhere and then a little stuffed version of it. So my mom now has a goat, a sheep, a cow, a llama, like, and then some stuffed chickens. Like, so she has this little menagerie that she knows elsewhere in the world is someone's farm or multiple people's farms. Anyway, I just thought that was, I thought what a great, so I highly recommend if you have people in your family that are like, I don't want anything. Gift giving just feels commercialized and like the wrong spirit of Christmas. I love that way of doing it.
Yeah. I also accept gift cards though.
Yeah, sure. No, I'll take a Best Buy gift card any day.
Yeah. I like the Ghost of Christmas Past. I don't think we should eliminate any of it. I mean, Jacob.
No, I'm not eliminating. I'm just saying that my personal, I don't know. And it's just because I came into this story so young and it's been such a big part of my Christmas every year since I was really little. It's been my favorite story for so long. And like, that's just the one character that I think does an amazing thing, but I don't know. Maybe I'm more partial to Falstaff than Banquo.
Well, let's talk about Falstaff, the Falstaff of A Christmas Carol. Let's talk about the Ghost of Christmas Present. It's no surprise you would like him as an I like him too, or them.
Yeah. He's just gobbling up scenery.
Yeah. Just like a big, friendly, jovial, down to party, enjoys a feast, is going to show, like, you know that they know where all the good parties are.
Right.
And have the best food recommendation. Like if you, whatever you want to cook, they're like, oh, I got a great recipe for that. And then they send it to you and you're like, this was great. I didn't think to use butter in a soup.
Yeah.
And yet it's really good.
You know what? That's actually not a terrible idea. Now I'm going to put a pat of butter every time I make a chicken noodle soup.
You put it in vegetable soup, like a tomato-based soup. It's really, really good. It cuts
a little umami kick.
A little bit. Yeah.
I like
that. So nice. Like a tablespoon is all you need in a big pot.
Here's another reason I'm fascinated by the Ghost of Christmas Present. Aside from just his gregariousness, I love – he has such a cool story to me that never really gets told. It gets hinted at and you find out little snippets of it. Like he says he's sort of absent-minded. This character's kind of absent-minded. It's because he was just born. That's what fascinates me about the Ghost of Christmas Present is he is brand new. He exists for one night and for one day, I guess, because at the beginning of it, you know, Scrooge says, he says, do you not know me? And he says, no. And he says, have you met any of my brothers? And he says, how many brothers do you have? Or brothers and sisters? How many brothers and sisters do you have? Some 1800, meaning every year there is a Ghost of Christmas Present. It's like Baby New Year. There's a Ghost of Christmas Present. And he lives and exists only for that one day. And by the end of it, it's the reason that by the end of that section of the story, his hair is white. And he says, my time here is almost done because he only exists for that day.
Yeah. Housefly.
And he gets real dark at the end when he's like, hey, this is look how great Christmas is. Isn't this great? Here are ignorance and want, two emaciated children hiding underneath the folds of his robe with sunken eyes. Like, he provides Scrooge a little nightmare right at the end. I don't know. I think there's so many crazy layers to this. And I think his story makes my imagination move.
It's so funny, that you mentioned that backstory because I had a different backstory for him.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Go on.
10 years ago, a crack commando unit was sent to prison by a military court for a crime they didn't commit.
I hate you
this
so
much. This man promptly escaped from a maximum security stockade into the Los Angeles underground. Today, still wanted by the government, he survives as a soldier of fortune. If you have a problem,
I hate you.
No one else can help, and you can find him. Maybe you can hire the Ghost of Christmas Present. Yeah, it's really sad. It's just going to die. Like, I'm so excited. Oh, it's so early in the evening. I'm so happy to see you.
Yeah. I also, if you're alive, if you're alive for one, oh, wait, say that again. I cut you off and that's a really funny bit.
I hope this night never ends. Also, have you met my 1800 brothers and sisters? Cause I sure haven't. They all died.
Wait a minute. I'm putting this together now. Hold on. Yeah.
Imagine that ceremony. One must die so the other may be born. One must die so the other may be born. Oh, mom, she bye. Oh, mom, she bye. Oh, mom, she bye.
Kalima Shakti Day. Yeah, it's look, and you got to hand it to this particular Ghost of Christmas Present. I don't know what the previous 1820 or however many there were Ghosts of Christmas Present. I don't know what they did with their one day. They get one day.
One day more.
And it's Christmas. Another day, another destiny. They get one day and it's Christmas. And this particular Ghost of Christmas Present takes a real bullet being like, you know what? I'm alive for one day. And what do I do on my one day that I'm alive? Which happens to be Christmas, by the way. I show this guy around who, by the way, at this point in the story is still mostly a jerk.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's tough. True. It's altruistic.
Do you think that, what do you think the worst Ghost of Christmas Present was like?
Gray Sports Almanac. No, he wouldn't know, would he?
That's
He's only around for a day.
Past.
That's Ghost of Christmas Past. I imagine that the worst Ghost of Christmas Present just went around the different homes because he knows where all the good food is and just full on picked one of the seven deadly sins, in this case, gluttony, and just went to town. Everybody's looking at their plate like, what happened? Where'd my dinner go? Didn't we have a great Christmas dinner lined up? Like we had mashed potatoes and green bean casserole. They were right here a second ago. Meanwhile, there's this green robed giant monster who's quickly aging and stuffing his face with all of your food.
Oh, you want to see what's happening down the road?
Or if there was one that was just super into Christmas movies and he just got here, he's like, I got 24 hours to watch Hallmark. Or you know what? I'm going to switch on AMC. I'm just going to watch A Christmas Story 11 times.
Or watches one movie that shows up at your house with a series of cards with phrases written on it. Dates carolers.
To me, you are perfect. There's this creepy, I think he's been watching Love Actually, this very large bearded green robed man who's rapidly aging.
He's so old. You think he drank out of the wrong grail? That's what their parents did. One Christmas, they went hunting for the Holy Grail. And then I know it was before the Holy Grail. Just humor me. It's a podcast. And then they each took a sip, like, you know, at a Jewish wedding, you're supposed to take a sip out of the Kiddush cup. And this one they took out of the wrong grail, but it's only a really little sip. So now their kids are born and they just immediately start Julian Glovering their way to death.
Yeah, but they don't Julian, because it was a little sip, they don't Julian Glover in those 30 seconds. They do it over the course of a whole day.
Oh, you'd have to time lapse it to really get that effect, but it happens.
Okay, so have we exhausted I feel like we've talked more about the Ghost of Christmas Present than the lifespan of a Ghost of Christmas Present.
This is true. I think we're ready to move on
to
the Slim Reaper.
The Ghost of Christmas Present is my current – he's in the number one slot for me right now.
I would never have guessed.
Yeah. who's in your number one slot right now? You don't have one that's taken the –
Undecided.
Okay.
Undecided. Right. I see merits in all of them.
Yeah. I see merit. I am not poo-pooing any of the others. And one of those others we'll talk about right now. That is the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come. which is the pretentious way of saying the Ghost of Christmas Future. So I like movies that call him the Ghost of Christmas Future.
Mm-hmm.
It's all the like early old ones that call him the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come. Though I don't know. I do like that too.
Yeah. Because that actor who delivers that line is like, my word count is too low. I need three more words.
Yet to come. Say yet to come. Well, no, technically it's only two more words.
Well, it used to be future. Now it's future. Christmas yet to come. So I've added three words.
Well, yeah, but you've removed one.
For it somebody to have been get me a mustard blot.
Look, all I have is this crumb of cheese.
Fair enough.
No, don't do that. A Ghost of Christmas Present will show up.
Ghost.
Come and know me better, man. You thought you were done with me. I'm alive for one day, and it shall be spent annoying you.
So, yeah, the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come. You know what? I take back what I said before. I think I prefer Yet to Come now.
Oh, really?
I guess it's in the modern adaptations, they say, Christmas Future.
Yeah.
But
the correct ones.
Either way, Charles Dickens got lazy and just described the Grim Reaper.
Yep.
So that's really all that this character is, though, you know, you can, onto a blank slate, you can pretty much put anything you want, right? So you've got this cloaked figure. You never see his face. So you don't know if he's or her or their face. You don't know if there's a skeleton under there. It's just a dark hood. You can guess because it's, you know, bone fingers that are sticking out of the robe. Though I don't know if it's in the book or if it's just the cloak that you see. It's just a black cloak. So
yeah.
That is like the ghost in Scream. That is terrifying already. No sound, no talking, just points every once in a while.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts on this guy?
Yeah, I mean, he's just kind of creepy, points at stuff, doesn't get to talk. I'm more interested in his internal monologue than anything that happens while he's on screen, because it's just all, like, dark. Like, oh, look, I'm going to point at a grave. That's basically what I do. But inside his head, he's probably like, a loaf of bread, dozen eggs, quart of milk, a couple sticks of butter, got to get more canned peas, ran out of canned. What am I cooking that's using all these canned peas?
Why are you just pointing at a tree, Ghost of Yet to Come?
Crap, I ought to point at that grave. There we go.
What, no, this anyway. Next to the, oh dear God!
I gotta get condensed milk.
Tell me, Spirit.
Why is that in my head?
Tell me I may wipe the name clean from this headstone. I am not the man I was.
Oh, don't respond.
I shall keep baby. Christmas in my heart.
Don't respond.
The past, the present, and the future shall all live within me.
Just be cool. Just be cool. You've done this a million times.
Save me, Spirit. Tell me I can be saved, that I've yet hope.
That's right. Nothing. Don't give him anything. Don't you give him anything yet to come.
Oh, YTC. Won't you speak to me, Spirit?
Come on, YTC. Stay strong. Stay
speak strong. To me.
Just point. Gotta point. I'm gonna do it. I'm pointing.
Don't just point. Speak to me.
Send it back. Send it back. Oh, this is too hard.
What? Why, it's Christmas morning.
Oh, goodness. I gotta go shop.
Hey, Hal, can you hear that in the background, by the way?
Wait, what day is this? Is it time for the break? You boy, go fetch some of the other podcasts for the Max Fun Network.
Who, me?
That's right, you. And keep one podcast for yourself. We'll be right back.
Whoosh!
Merry podcast, everybody. All right, Mark, we've both talked about Fortunato Chocolate here. One of our proud sponsors in the We Got This Family.
We've also talked about Fortunato Chocolate off mic.
That's true.
And how much we enjoy it.
And now we're going to talk about it together. What are your crib notes?
My crib notes for Fortunato Chocolate? Okay, I'll give my crib notes. Since 2008, Fortunato No. 4 Chocolate has been prized by top chocolatiers and pastry chefs in Michelin-starred restaurants. Yeah. I wrote that note down. Also on my crib sheet, I see, here we go. It's made from rare, organically grown heirloom cacao from the jungles of northern Peru and has never been available to the general public until now.
I want to talk about that for a second.
To get you a pretty good.
Yes, I think it's a big deal. This is like high-end restaurant-quality chocolate that you can have delivered to your home. It's made by a family company that has direct relationships with over 400 farmers and a socially conscious business model that actually helps farm families earn more. Now, you can get a lot of different choices. You get 36% milk, 47% dark milk, and 68% dark, and they're sold in 1.1.
Which is your favorite? Hold on, hold on. I know you're just trying to get right through the copy. You're trying
We're
talking about the chocolate, Hal.
I wanted to talk about the chocolate. Don't call me.
You were just burning through the copy to get to talking about the chocolate?
Mark, you're embarrassing me in front of Fortunato chocolate. I think my favorite.
Sorry, I don't. Here. You know what, Hal? Here. Take a bite of this. This is the 36% milk.
You want me to chew on Mike? I'll do it.
Yeah,
I'll do it right now.
I hate chewing on Mike.
I want to say the dark because the dark is so good. They both have, and I talked about this when I did the ad, a depth of flavor that is sort of out of this world that you don't expect. Like, I expected it to be good chocolate. I didn't expect it to be the best chocolate I've ever had in my life.
You didn't expect to eat it and feel like you were traveling. That's what I thought. I was like, I feel like I'm traveling when I eat this chocolate. It feels like it is from another place and time, and that I'm experiencing that.
Yeah, I felt like, this should be in a ganache at the Four Seasons, not on my cutting board as Jennifer and I sample it and go like, how do we say it? We have to use this in some baking recipes. We got to make this stretch. I think the 47% dark milk is fantastic. I mean, they're all great. I think the milk chocolate is my favorite because I'm so used to.
Yeah, the milk chocolate's so good.
I'm used to like the general kind of processed chocolate flavor where like this milk chocolate is pretty good, but to actually have it like properly made high-end milk chocolate, that is a real treat.
Well, I'll tell you, people can get that treat now. They used to not be able to, but now the general public can actually get Fortunato No. 4 chocolate sold in 1.1 pound bars with minimal packaging to keep it affordable. Visit podcastchocolate.com/we got this. That's podcastchocolate.com/we got this, and they can try it for themselves.
Yes, do it now, and you're welcome in advance.
And we're back. Did you hear that siren, by the way? Well, now there goes.
Oh, again. I still listen. Hear it. I thought it was
okay.
A bell.
Listen. Okay, do you hear that?
Mm-hmm.
Tell me that doesn't sound like the big buildup late in the John Williams Superman theme.
Yes, it really does.
Doesn't it? Where the horns are going, right?
Yes.
I think that every time I hear an Italian ambulance go by. And then I think to myself, it's cool. Superman's on it.
He's fixing everything in Italy.
That old ghost of Christmas present is just going around screwing up.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's not Christmas yet. You know what it is? It's the ghost of September 25th. Like, if you were a ghost of Christmas present, that's a good one to be. If you're the ghost of, like, March 9th. Sorry, I keep going back to the ghost of Christmas present. We're talking about the Grim Reaper, the Slim Reaper, the ghost of Christmas future, yet to come, whatever we're calling him.
By the way, the ghost of December 26th is just a receipt with a beard.
And boxing gloves, because he's Canadian.
Oh, yeah. Well, a box. Filled with boxing gloves.
Oh, God. Do you think anybody ever returns boxing gloves on Boxing Day?
I mean, they have to. Somebody at least gets one as a joke.
Right.
You know.
Probably an American got it like, see, like boxing. And the Canadians are like, yeah, that's like,
that's not what it is. It's a box that you gave your servants the day after Christmas with food and stuff in it. It's British.
Oh, is that what it is?
Anyway. Yes.
I just knew it wasn't about boxing.
No, it's literally a box.
Oh.
It'd be like, all right, Servants' Day off, I think, if I'm not mistaken.
We'll have to ask the ghost of Boxing Day present, who's very polite.
Sorry. Yeah, that's right. If you want it to be right, that's okay. Yeah.
All right. Let me ask you this, Hal, because I asked it about the ghost of Christmas past and the ghost of Christmas present. Would you want – I guess I didn't ask about Christmas present, but of course you want to see the present Christmas. Would you want to see a future Christmas?
I like the anticipation of the future.
But you would know what your presents were. Counterpoint.
Yeah, but I like not knowing. That's the fun. You get to open
presents. I'm with you. It's, and it's, of course, not just about the presents. Like the idea of The idea of knowing the future to me is daunting and scary and horrifying. And as curious as I would be about it, it feels like something that just needs to happen in its time.
Yeah, that's a tremendous burden to know the future.
Yeah.
And it becomes, I mean, in this case, Scrooge is like, tell me this is what could be, not what will be. And then he changes his ways.
Oh, man, guess I gotta go shopping. I gotta get a blot of mustard, a crumb of cheese.
A bit of bad beef.
Look, we gotta have somebody do this again next year.
That sounds like all the stuff that would be at a mouse buffet. Oh, every time I go to the bad bit of beef carving station, I feel like I have to strike up a conversation with the carver, and neither of us is into it. And then we wind up just talking about the weather, which we've both been outside. It hasn't changed radically. Oh, I like to serve your own blots of mustard bar much better.
They have soft serve blots of mustard, right? Or is it the you have to scoop it?
They're both. They have hard mustard and soft mustard.
Oh, cool.
And
you can that's good.
What you
they
like
have toppings?
Uh-huh. Yeah. There's a huge fixins bar
good.
With other mustards.
All right. So look, there's not really much to say except about the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come, except that he is blank slate so you can overlay whatever you want onto him.
Right.
He shows Scrooge some horrifying things. A bunch of people callously, raiders, people who had raided his home. And I believe one of them was his maid just selling all of his belongings to old Joe. There's that scene. There's a scene of a bunch of people standing around talking about what a jerk he was.
Right.
And then there's, we didn't even talk about this with Christmas Present with Bob Cratchit, him showing him his clerk and being like, see what you did. This is the continuation of that. We can talk about it here. The Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come being like, see what happens, not just to you, but look what your awfulness did. I'm taking an alley-oop and I'm going to get the dunk from Ghost of Christmas Present on this one, because he showed you who the Cratchits were. You didn't even know that he had kids and a wife, and one of his kids was on crutches. I'm going to show you the absolute worst version of what happens to this family. And that is a harsh move, but a needed one for Scrooge. Do you think that... Like, I'm not certain that just seeing Christmas Present changed Scrooge entirely. And I don't think that it was just his past and the future that involves him that changed him entirely either. I think it might be a good combination of all of those, like the Venn diagrams cross at the scene where the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come is showing him what could happen to Cratchit. And Scrooge actually cares.
Sure, sure. It builds to that.
Mm-hmm. Which I think is, I'm just thinking about it now. Like, that seems to me like that is the him seeing himself on a grave. Like, look, everybody dies. It's the future. You're an old man already. It could be, you know, like, it's not so much that he's seeing his grave. It's that he's seeing the grave of the people who were saying bad things about the person whose name they never mentioned.
It also is kind of bad because it's Tiny Tim's grave that they're visiting, and he.
Oh, they're visiting Tiny Tim's grave.
Yeah.
But
his assumption is like, oh, I definitely outlived this sick kid. Like, I definitely, what are we like? Are we like, is it next year? Is it next year? Is it 2 years? Is that what it is? Cause it's definitely, I know I lived longer. And then like, joke's on you. You're also dead. Punk.
Oh, God. Yeah. So This is a dark one.
Yeah, I think because he just points and stuff.
Yeah.
He really lets the scenery do all the work instead of, it doesn't like narrate us through it. It's just it's that point where Dickens is thinking, I'm close to the end of the book. This segment doesn't have to be too long. We don't, does this ghost really need to say a bunch of stuff, or can they just point at everything? That'll be way better. They'll point. They won't say anything. He'll figure it all out himself. Really, Scrooge is doing all the work there.
Yeah. He's just going to stand there and think about his shopping list and point.
Yeah.
It's funny that you mention Dickens thinking, I'm almost done with this, because this was, did we talk about this on the show before, that this was a commission of sorts?
I don't know that we did, but
one of my favorite crazy bits of you know, Christmas trivia, I guess, is that in the 1800s, Christmas had gotten so out of hand as a rowdy, like, it was more like SantaCon than Christmas. Just a okay. bunch of drunk people in the street.
Right.
And there was a concerted effort by the English to make Christmas not that anymore. So this was by the members of high society sort of all agreed that we've got to clean Christmas up. Charles, why don't you write a story where Christmas is all about the joyful spirit and, you know, harmony with your fellow man. And so Dickens kind of invented the modern version of that, of the Christmas spirit being this. Because before right. this, it was just a drunken party. And then after that, in the United States, sort of as like a tag team effort, the United States said, we're going to make this about kids. So Clement Moore and Thomas Nast kind of teamed up with A Visit from St. Nicholas and told the story of Santa Claus and, you know, uncovered that story and really dug into it and put that story out into the world, let them know what they'd found. So that it was kind of a weird 1-2 punch of Christmas completely changing from just a big drunken street party. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. We had stepped out of the story for a second. But yeah, I just thought that was a fun, that it was like, it was a concerted effort in both Britain and the United States by both of those men to change what Christmas fundamentally was.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Right?
Very interesting.
This might all get cut because I realize I do run the risk of being that one particular Saturday Evening Post cover right now. And I don't mean to be.
I want you to be. I think this ultimately comes down to past versus present.
So I was going to say, I think it comes down to Marley versus present.
Marley? You really want to bring him back into this?
His story Christmas Past is a facilitator. Christmas Past's job is to show Scrooge around. There's really no story aside from I'm made of light. There's a light on my head. I'm a teeny creepy old man that shows you your past, but you can't really do anything in it. Jacob Marley he's Shakespearean. He's been dragging chains around for 7 years. Christmas Present lives for one day. Like these are epic, heady stories that could have their own entire tale told about them.
What are the criteria we're going by here? By what criteria are those your two finalists? I'm curious to see.
My criteria, I guess, since we never really established it at the top, we skipped that part.
Yeah.
The criteria that just popped up in my brain were, which of these are the most interesting?
Okay.
You know what I mean? And the most interesting ones to me are those two characters. I think Christmas Past is not a terribly interesting character. I think much in the same way Christmas Yet to Come, in that way that Scrooge is doing most of the work. The first one is just a book report on who Scrooge is.
Right.
And he is learning through seeing this, and we're obviously learning the story of his life, and he's being reminded of things, and he's the one who's going on a journey at that point. The Ghost of Christmas Past is just facilitating by showing him what's already happened. Can't change anything, can't do anything. There's no real story to that character. Christmas Future is the same thing. Christmas Future, there's no real story to Ghost of Christmas Future because that's not the point of the story at that point. And the Ghost of Christmas Future is the same way. Sorry, the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come is the same way. They're facilitating Scrooge seeing what his life could be. And I can see that Christmas Present is also that, but he has this added detail of he's only alive for one day, which is imaginative and cool. And Jacob Marley has an entire history with Scrooge and sets this whole thing into motion to begin with. That's why for me, it seems like it's between those two. Why would you rule Marley out? Did you go in deciding he was not the one?
I just feel like he's only really works with one person. I feel like the other ghosts
That's true.
Are serving the whole world. And that, like, he's sort of got the easiest job. And the rest of the year, he's just sort of wandering around, and
yeah,
he's got the chains and the money boxes, and just
which means he's not wandering fast.
I just look at him and I go, like, what's your deal, man? I'm not into
you. Have a toothache?
Yeah, you have a toothache. You make noise everywhere you go. It's annoying.
Can I tell you another great moment?
Yes.
That I love of Jacob Marley's before we eliminate him.
Sure.
And this is more in the Shakespearean performance of it, because in the book, it's a much more terrifying thing. Scrooge says he does it right after that blot of mustard, crumb of cheese. There's more of gravy than of grave about you. And then thunderous, you know, terrified. The ghost suddenly becomes terrifying. Mm-hmm. And then Scrooge cowers in front of the ghost, and the ghost says, now do you believe in me? And he says, I must. I do. Now, when you have the technology or the book in front of you and the imagination to create this giant dramatic fear moment, it's really something. But when all you have is the dude from the Old Vic and the scene goes, there's more of gravy than of grave about you. Now do you believe in me? Yes, I must. Just an actor having that, like, nope, you got to do it yourself moment is amazing to me. Leo G. Carroll in the Reginald Owen version of it. That is just another one of those great, it's like the jaw drop moment.
Yeah.
But I get it. If you think that he's only, you know, if you think that he's only there for
You're going by like which
the
role
protagonist. Yeah, kind of. No, I'm just going by, I would love to play Jacob Marley at some point, but I'm going by which characters I find the most exciting.
He doesn't have, like, what powers does he have outside of just showing up? He can't take him anywhere.
That's true. Christmas Present has that cone that makes people nice.
Yeah.
We forgot about that. Like, they both carry cones. Part one carries cone. Christmas Past carries a cone, which is to douse out the light shooting out the top of its head. And Christmas Present carries a cone that he waves and it makes people nice. Come on, man. How's it not Christmas Present?
And the Ghost of Christmas Future carries a cone, but it's around his neck so he doesn't lick his own wounds.
That's so dumb.
It's the stupidest thing I've said this morning, which is really saying something.
Yeah. Come on, man. You know it's true. You know it's the Ghost of Christmas Present.
I think it is the Ghost of Christmas Present. I think the Ghost of Christmas Present seems like the most fun. And hey, if only because they're only getting, each one only gets 24 hours on this earth.
Yeah. They have to be fun. You know, there were probably in the 1800, there were a few stinkers and there was that one that stole everybody's food. But
sure.
By and large, a Ghost of Christmas Present is going to be fun.
Yeah. We'll have a good old time. The Ghost of Christmas Present. People of the world, you get visited by a lot of ghosts on Christmas. It is Ghost City up in here. But the best ghost of all, the most special ghost, isn't around for that long. Sorry about it.
Yeah.
It's the ghost of Christmas Present. Big old young Santa Claus, then old Santa Claus. Does it come out a baby? Is it just some weird ceremony? When the Holy Grail, the parents, the whole thing. That's the reason why. That's the reason why, folks. Now you know. The greatest spirit you can be visited by is the Ghost of Christmas Present. That's asked and that's answered. Merry Christmas.
God bless us, everyone. This topic is closed, but there are many more to discuss. So please, reach out to us on Twitter or...
You can email us at wegotthispodcast@gmail.com or visit our Facebook group. It would be ever so kind of you if you did. facebook.com/groups/wegotthispodcast. Thank you to producer Ken Plume, researcher Kate McManus, graphic designer Uri Kelman, and QA engineer Jennifer Alba.
And thanks to our musicians, Jonathan Dinerstein and Mike Furman, for our score and theme song respectively. And thanks to you, the people of the world, for giving us an opportunity to say to you right now, God bless us, everyone.
For Hal Loveland, I'm Mark Gagliardi.
For Mark Gagliardi, I'm Hal Loveland. Don't worry, everybody.
We got this.
We got this.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.